It's Thursday, July 19th, 2012, and you're listening to PC Gamer Podcast number 322. I'm Evan Lotti, Executive Editor, and I'm burdened with an unusual enthusiasm about our set of topics today, as well as the company of my fine companions. You just heard PC Gamer Editor-in-Chief and our only direct line to the feline mothership, Logan Decker. Logan has been wearing... I'll just let you tell our listeners what you've been adorning your skull with this week, Logan. Can hear it there.
Can you hear the
servos.
It's called the Neko Mimi.
They are brainwave cat ears. I believe they debuted at Comic-Con.
It's amazing.
And somehow they got the idea that I might like this strange robotic cat ear contraption.
What a concept.
What on earth? Where did they get that idea?
So I'm baffled.
Yeah, so like you put it on your head, it reads all your thoughts, every single one, even the ones you're not aware of. And there's nothing you can hide from the Neko Mimi. Nothing.
Yeah. Transmits it to the mothership.
And the cat ears respond by...
They express themselves with a series of twitches and
exactly.
movement.
And so eventually, my guess is in 200-300 years, our mouths are going to simply drop off because we don't use them anymore because we communicate solely through the Neko Mimi ears,
yes.
right? So what other mode of communication do we need? Pretty much none.
It's the most efficient, expressive.
Right. That's me thinking.
All right. I think that is the most like generous introduction you've ever been granted on the PC Gamer podcast. Terrific. We also have Tyler Wilde.
Hi.
Hi, Tyler.
I won't just grunt at our listeners.
No sweat. And to my left, TJ, our intern.
I am afraid for my life with those things. They're gonna corrupt you. They're gonna make you kill us all.
They can read your thoughts too.
I know. I am aware of this. Yeah.
Terrific. So other than bionic cat ears, we do have some actual PC gaming news to talk to you guys about this week. And we'll kick it off with... So this just got announced this morning. It's Thursday again. We're recording here. And I heard about this last night. I got a phone call from a PR person saying like, hey, we're going to announce a game tomorrow morning. Do you want information on it? I'm like, well, yes. I'm not gonna say no. Like, sure, tell me what you got.
We hate information. We're journalists.
So he walks me through it, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, it's a zombie survival shooter MMO." And I'm like, "Oh, wow, that's interesting." And he's telling me about its background, its origin, and stuff. And as he's describing these features, there's a hardcore mode with permadeath. There are hunger mechanics. There's PvP and PvE. There's massive open worlds. There are zombies, of course. I'm like, wow, this sounds familiar. So, yeah, this morning we revealed, along with the rest of the gaming media, a game called... This is the actual name. I don't mean to sound, like, cynical, but it's a bad name.
I agree.
Separate from the concept, The War Z is the name.
Yeah.
So before we get into it, just to break down exactly what the game is, what we know, it's coming out this autumn, this fall, if you prefer... for $30, no subscription fee. It's from a new developer called Hammerpoint Interactive that seems to be formed specifically for this project, although they sort of imply that's made up of people that have worked on different other projects. And, the long list of features is really symmetrical with DayZ, of course, a game and a mod that we've been talking a lot about over the past couple of months. The Arma 2 mod, if this is your first time hearing it, Zombies Survival Simulator. But, to the War Z's credit, it is promising a lot of, like, features that would make sense in DayZ or any other kind of cool game of this nature. 250 player capacity compared to, like, DayZ's about 50 or 60, depending on what server you're playing on. Worlds up to 400 kilometers and multiple maps. A bounty placing system on people that you don't like. Or, people that have killed you, perhaps. There's also going to be a mechanic in place where you turn into a zombie. There's, like, a vaccine system, player clans and alliances, in-game message boards, item storage, even stuff like rare zombies that only spawn in the night that, like, you have to, like, harvest stem cells from that you can, like, sell in this marketplace and stuff. So, like, they have some ideas. Mm-hmm. No gameplay video yet, only a handful of screenshots, a lot of promises. But I mean, the obvious response here is this is the first clone of DayZ.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even the screenshots they released look a lot like DayZ. Like it's a guy in a baseball cap shooting zombies.
With
like
a backpack.
It seems like they almost wanted to encourage the comparison in their marketing materials.
Yeah, yeah. And in an interview with IGN that they did, I mean, they talked openly about this. Like, well, I guess they didn't really, I don't know, tip their hat to DayZ. They didn't really dodge the subject.
Right, to their credit, right.
And yeah,
like
totally.
Up front.
And I think, like, I don't know, I was sort of, the response so far on comment threads and whatnot has been pretty expected. I think there's sort of this range of, like, people that kind of understandably were put off by some of DayZ's, like, design philosophies and how hardcore it was, how unfinished it was, and like, oh, hey, we get a standalone game that's going to be $30. That'll be a little bit more finished, hypothetically, you know, if all these promises come true.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, some people are upset that there's a lot of unoriginality here, to be honest. And I'm curious how you guys feel about, well, I guess, first of all, the game as a concept and just does it sound interesting to you? And do you have faith in it? But also sort of start a discussion about, you know, do game developers have a responsibility to always be original? And is, you know, do we care about that?
Okay, so just to be clear, what I'm going to be talking about here is what was described to us. You know, so just assuming that those features will come to fruition and all that, and it is exactly how they describe it. There are new ideas here, and it is a somewhat bolder, bigger take on it in some ways. And I guess the first comparison, the analogy that comes to my mind is, you know, somebody comes out and puts distortion on a guitar, you know? Somebody else comes out with a record that puts distortion on a guitar. They both have they can have completely different songs. The expression, you know, the songs themselves can be entirely different experiences. This sounds on paper just like DayZ, only bigger with some new features, right? The experience may be far superior. It may be awful. It may be conceptually great, but technically flawed. It may be technically great, but conceptually flawed and all that, you know? So I think it's completely fair game. No, you know, we've seen examples like the Torchlight thing where assets do seem to have been copied directly, right? It really looked like that. I don't know that that's what happened, but it sure looked like it. That's not cool. We've seen examples, especially in all the mobile games, right, of just cut and paste design.
Yeah.
And to be honest, you know, there's certainly gray area in between copying and you know, riffing on somebody's idea.
Yeah.
But I find this to be well in the you know, green zone of, okay, that's a great idea. Let's build on it, you know. And we all, and, you know, zombie culture is common to everybody, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and look at the MOBA genre. Like if you look at, you know,
great example.
Dota
right.
2, League of Legends, Heroes of New Earth. They're all essentially the same mechanic. It's all essentially you pick a hero and it's 5-on-5 and you have like 4 abilities that are Q, W, E, and R, and you know, you buy items to make your guy stronger, but they're all their own game, even though they're all, you know, based on the original Dota and they have their own, you know, followings and enough to differentiate them to where, you know, people would not argue that Dota and League of Legends are exactly the same game. They have some significant difference.
Definitely.
Wow, TJ just gave a relevant example. Can we edit that out? Because it makes me sound kind of lame.
No.
just cut before his voice and cut after.
Well, I was going to say, I like that you brought up music because, I mean, there's this long history of experimental music and then sort of a popular variation
right.
or someone spinning it into a popular variation. And honestly, I think I'm a little skeptical about this game becoming a reality in with all these huge promises they've made, which
are
substantial. I mean,
yeah.
Like, let's stop a second and just say to ourselves, like, let's make a list of modern game engines that support 250 simultaneous players. Arms doesn't yet. PlanetSide and Eve, kind of, not a shooter, but, you know.
You could do it in Unreal if it was modified heavily. Isn't Guild Wars Unreal?
Yeah. So that alone, not even taking into account, like,
I'm sure modified and
enemy spawning,
not a shooter.
Yeah, and environment size. So I'm you know, I'm skeptical about that side of it, but I do think like this, I do expect this to be just inferring like from the screenshots, the look of the game mm-hmm. and the fact that they don't mention realism. They mention like authenticity mm-hmm. a little bit. They don't mention like, you know, bullet ballistics. They don't mention weapon mechanics necessarily. And like, you know, things like repairing weapons, they have like a player skill system, for example. Like it seems like much more of a conventional RPG than a sim.
Yeah,
which I'm fine with. You know, I think a lot of people would welcome that kind of experience. A lot of people are understandably intimidated by DayZ. That doesn't make them non-gamers or casual gamers or something. Mm-hmm. They prefer something else, and that's totally cool.
Yeah,
and we're getting it, and I think that's like what we're getting at here. Like, if we worked in an industry and consumed in an industry where there were like these intense patents and regulations for these sorts of things, like you're talking about MOBA games. If League of Legends was the only MOBA game or the only type of game that could have, you know, five on five gameplay from like an RTS perspective and four abilities, and that was somehow patented, like we wouldn't have Dota as like a variation,
right?
You know, I couldn't prefer that flavor over that flavor. You know, I couldn't take medium over mild, so to speak, or something.
Right.
Yeah.
For comparison, how big is the map in
225.
So they're talking about double the size.
No, about.
Oh yeah, no, they are.
Yeah.
I was looking at the wrong number. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it falls into riffing. When we talk about like Minecraft spawned this whole like fascination with voxels and boxes, and there's game, mm-hmm. You know, all kinds of games and building and freeform building, and that became a genre. I think it's not even so much the zombies or the fact that it's the War Z. It's this idea of permadeath, PvP, PvE. Gameplay. I think that will be a genre because DayZ proved how much fun it is to have an environment attacking you and the possibility that players will team up with you or shoot you.
I agree.
A shooter with that is I think it won't necessarily always be zombies, but
a game with Borderlands as setting could operate that way.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
Borderlands isn't necessarily apocalyptic.
No, yeah,
and it certainly isn't really zombie driven. So, but I think I could see it operating that way.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. So I'm excited to see what they do. I'm worried about the speed at which they claim to have developed and they claim to be releasing all of these promises. That seems really fast for such an ambitious thing. But you know, maybe we haven't seen it. So
yeah.
Oh my God! But are they gonna have giraffes? Oh, that would be amazing. Well,
you were talking about zombie giraffes the other day.
Yeah.
That was on our last episode. Okay.
You cannot evade them. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't.
They are zombie turrets.
Yeah.
That's all they are.
You would have a real hard time in the zombie apocalypse, Logan, because you'd be hiding, you know, in a dark corner, and then a zombie would walk in, and you'd just hear as your ears stood on end.
I mean, they're basically.
Yeah, exactly. Totally give you away.
They're basically spine crawlers from StarCraft.
Yeah, angry giraffe.
That's what zombie giraffes are.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To giraffes, I thought there's a different plural for some reason. Anyway.
Giraffes with a V? I don't think that's correct.
Not so much about that.
But, you know, for anybody that's sort of like deeply offended, I'm not sure if that's the case for anybody that's listening, by plagiarism or copycatting or whatever you want to call it, whatever name you attach to it, like, to some extent, like, I feel as much as I feel like I'm a champion of originality. I love DayZ partly because it has, I mean, you could say zombies are deeply unoriginal, but a lot of original spins on a concept and is willing to take a lot of risks. This is how genres are born.
Mm-hmm.
I really think. And this is a genre I would like to have flourish and like compete with itself, right? Over design and features and you know, look and feel and all that stuff. So why not?
Yeah. Well, and I loved what Dean Rocket Hall said about, you know, he likes the idea of competition. You know, he's not coming down on them at all.
Yeah.
In terms of taking ideas.
Right. Yeah. Right after I heard this news, I emailed Dean. I was like, hey, what do you think about this? And he gave me a response. Yeah. He was basically like, he was kind of like sharing our attitude to some extent. Like, hey, this, like, gamers are going to win out of this. He's also kind of skeptical about all the promises they're making.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was sort of propping up the fact that like the Arma engine has some unique advantages for this type of game, and that's going to be extremely hard to replicate. But he wasn't critical at all, beyond that. Yeah, right. I think he's paraphrasing me. He said the soldier in him, he was part of the New Zealand military. Yeah. An officer actually welcomes competition. So
that's awesome.
Maybe we'll get a better DayZ because of this game. I don't know.
And I loved the first comment on that thread. Somebody wrote, indie developer, kind, warm, respectful to competition. Apple, sue them.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean that's exactly what I was talking about when I brought up patents, because that is exactly the case in that industry where the most innocuous thing, like
rounded corners,
swiping your middle finger diagonally or something for a map application or something, like can't do that. We thought of that first. That's our idea.
I had a first generation Android phone and it couldn't use multi-touch until
that's right.
Google secured. The license, I suppose, from Apple to do that. And it's like using two fingers to zoom in and out is, I understand that you're allowed to patent that. It just,
I'm gonna patent picking up a phone with your hand.
But that would totally, what if the first person shooter had been patented, you know?
Yeah.
That would not have been good.
There is a lot of that happening with motion technology, it seems like, from like documents I've seen. I don't know how effective it is or how it compares. Anyway. Who cares about that stuff?
A new topic, different topic.
Connect is coming to PC. We'll talk about that.
Let's talk about IP and AAA.
Oh, the IP IPOs. Yeah. So PlanetSide is a game, and it's a game we like. Tyler got to play it. I wanted to sort of break this out from our...
Yeah, now two of us.
Our playlist section, because now a couple of us have played it. It was our favorite game, maybe three. I think we're comfortable saying it's one of our most anticipated games right now.
Boy, it was... silly and fun,
because of its ambition, among other things. But I sort of wanted to touch on, in addition to your impression, Tyler, because I think you've probably played it more than I have now, actually.
I think we played about 3 hours.
Okay. Okay, we're about the same then.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed at the organization. It's not SOE's fault, really. They had a bunch of people in a room, and they got as many testers in as possible. But they couldn't give us the experience of really playing it, because they couldn't get hundreds of people in. And then we had to learn. It takes a few hours.
Yeah.
It takes about the amount of time I was playing to figure out what the heck you're doing.
Yeah.
So I was a little disappointed that I kind of like didn't get to coordinate any battles and really take any bases like I would want to in the game, but I got to play with everything and that was good.
So I'm glad you bring that, because that's part of what I want to touch on, because we've been so positive about PlanetSide for, I think, reasonable reasons, but what are we skeptical about? And I think one of those things is we haven't seen, and you know, this will presumably happen when the beta opens up, which is going to be within 3 weeks now, I think.
Yeah, real soon.
Holy frilly.
The scale, you know, thousands of players that they're talking about that they've imagined for us, and they've been sort of shown in screenshots and portrayed, but haven't actually felt.
Yeah, well, when we talk about the ambition, a lot of it is, we're looking ahead and we're imagining what we're going to do in this game, and imagining the fun potential of it. I keep mentioning when I talk about it in previews or whatever, scenarios that I want to see. Or when I was actually just chatting with some of the SOE guys, like, I want to get 100 people in the air and do a blitzkrieg and fill the sky with swarms of aircraft and just, like, you know, play
Ride of the Valkyries.
Ride of the Valkyries, and just... You know, and is that viable? Will that destroy the server? You know, what's going to happen? And how organized am I going to get in squads and in outfit? No, is that?
Yeah, outfits.
Is there a sort of word for
clans?
Clans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it going to be huge ones like an Eve that take it super seriously and they're on Mumble? And I assume, because based on everything I'm hearing, people who play PlanetSide, they're already organizing. They're already ready to jump into two. And so this is all stuff we assume is going to happen. We just haven't seen it yet. And it'll be really exciting to see those stories where you spend all of Saturday taking a base and you just have to come in and tell everyone about it on Monday.
And I think one of the big things I'm still uncertain about, and it's a big question for me, is they're doing something interesting in that. So per server, there are three continents. Every faction has a headquarters or a foothold within that continent. So there are three factions of the game, and that foothold can't be, as I understand, like taken over. You can't ever be eliminated completely from a continent. But at the same time, they're having, you know, the concept of the game is interminable war, and it's all about that metagame of progress. Mm-hmm. You know, you fight an over an outpost, and it matters, and you conquered it, you got some more resources, you turn that section of the map your team's color, mm-hmm. and it's not just a multiplayer round. You know, what you did counted. So how are they going to sort of balance this sense of progress between, you can never actually win? You yeah. can't eliminate somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never ending.
Yeah, it's a never ending war because they can always come back and take some territory.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, I was with Lucas Sullivan at GamesRadar, our former intern, when we were down both at SOE, both playing. We both were talking to the creative director, Matt Higby, at the same time, and Lucas just sort of bluntly asked, how do you win the game?
And I was that like, is a great question.
That was a great question, Lucas. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, he gave the answer you'd expect. You can't win. There is no winning. It's a never-ending war. They can. One team could take all of the territory. You know, one faction, one empire could take all three continents, sure, I guess. But, you know, that probably won't happen, and yeah. it's going to go back and forth. I did ask, like, hey, is there what about a server with player-made bases? And they sort of they perked up at that and said, yeah, we're not going to talk about that, but that's something we've thought about. Mm. So that would change it if I invested in building a base and we're losing it. That would be different.
Yeah.
But the never-ending war thing.
What I'm hoping the answer is going to be, I mean, there is no way of winning, but what's rewarding about playing the game is you have a history.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of delicate design work and balancing, like time balancing, mm-hmm. that it's going to have to go into. Okay, imagine one night you take an outpost, you come back 24 hours later to you know, you log in with your buddies or something. Has that outpost traded hands three times since you've been away from your keyboard? Like, is it still the same? Like, I want to know, and this is, again, one of my big questions, how hard is it to sort of turn over the map in a day? Like, what's going to change? Like,
right.
And I feel like it's in their interest to make that a little difficult, just to create a sense of milestones and progress
mm-hmm.
in the metagame, where it's not like I come back in and things are just a jumble again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think that's super important, but it's delicate and like it's such a fine concept.
Yeah, what you're going to want to see is over days people posting screenshots of the map and showing colors slowly.
Because it can't be meaningless.
Well, yeah.
If it's trivial, if it's like a multiplayer capture point in mm-hmm. Team Fortress 2 or Battlefield, where you just kill and stand on it and it's yours. And it's trading hands multiple times an mm-hmm. hour or something? I don't know.
We definitely put one area of the map is where we just centered our battle because we didn't have enough players to fill it up. And they were changing hands because everyone was sort of focusing on it. And so they were going back and forth a little bit. But I did feel like there were some hard-earned wins. We were kind of messing around more than really playing.
Of course, yeah.
So I hope that is the case. I hope you see this progression of a front moving across the map over time.
Well, and that's one of the problems I had with Guild Wars 2 and playing in the last couple beta weekends and in the press beta is that, like, you would capture a town from the NPCs and then you'd ride back by an hour later and they would have taken it back from you again. Like, it didn't really feel persistent and meaningful because you're like, okay, I can go through this whole string of dynamic content and take territory for my side, but then I know if I don't stay here, you know, it's going to just revert back to how it was within an hour. And I'm hoping with Planetside, it'll be more persistent than that, where you might be like, okay, we really crushed them, so we're going to have this base for at least a weekend before I have to worry about it again.
Yeah.
That would definitely be nice. And, I mean, there is the fact that if you hold more territory, you have more resources. So if on a continent one of the empires doesn't have a lot of influence, they're going to have a harder time taking things from you because they will not have tanks at constant disposal and aircraft. So
that's kind of cool, though, because it's like an insurgency fighting the big,
right? You have fewer resources,
armored empire,
and so
yeah.
it feels like a bigger victory when you take a major base, or at least I hope it does. It's the kind of things we're hoping to see in the beta.
Yeah, I mean that sense of context and history and power balance changing. Yeah. I'm hoping that can sort of fill in the gap because there's going to be no firm narrative in there, of course. There's not going to be any firm, like, narrator telling you what's going on.
Yeah, I would
Yeah. So finally, I mean, we've been really complimentary about how the game looks. It's running on a custom engine, one of the few FPSs these days using a custom engine.
It's very pretty.
Along with like Natural Selection 2, which is a terrific looking indie game. But I'm wondering how you felt about graphical performance specifically, because this is the big worry. Like, if thousands of players converge in an area like they do sometimes in Eve, is the game has to chug, right? It has to.
You'd think. I don't know where they were running this sort of test. I don't know if that was like a local server or something, but it was very, very smooth as far as like there was no lag.
And this is like 70 or 80 people? 70 or 80
It was about that. Yeah. That's a good estimate, I think. I don't know the exact number. But yeah, it never lagged, which I was really happy about. Again, I don't.
Network lagged.
No, never network lagged. Okay. I was in a controlled environment. I don't know.
Of course.
In the wild. Something I mentioned in my preview, there was a lot of pop-in when flying over, which is kind of to be expected. Like, this continent I'm on is huge, and I'm flying over, basically, if you took, I don't know the exact size of a Battlefield 3 map, but imagine if you, like, fly off the edge of a Battlefield 3 map, and there's, like, 10 more of them in front of you, and you can keep going. Like, it is crazy. So the fact that you can do that without ever loading makes it understandable that, like, some rock formations are going to pop in here and there.
Yeah, to some extent, it's either that or draw distance, you know. It's like you either get one of those, probably.
It's funny, one of the things Higby said during his presentation was about, like, future-proofing it, and he's like, there are settings in the graphics that, even the best machine you could have right now can't possibly run, which I wasn't, I don't know, I didn't get to see that. So I don't know how true that is, but it looks good. I actually was less blown away than I thought. I still think it looks really good and unique. They're still working things out. It is definitely in beta.
And
I think they've said this beta is a real beta. It's not just a demo. Like the atmospheric effects between areas don't yet transition, so fog pops in. And that's something they're going to fix, of course, and I believe them when they say, no, we're not going to leave it like this. But, yeah, I just will say, if you do get into the beta, it is a beta. It's not totally polished yet, and that's pretty evident. But it all works, so as far as everything I played.
Cool. All right, well, we'll definitely share some more impressions once we get into that beta.
And also, it was really fun.
Glad to hear it. So, yeah, we expect to be in there within the next couple or 3 weeks.
Yay.
And we'll check in with you back then. Check back in with you then. That's what I wanted to
say.
Checking
back you.
Yes. So we talked about Fortnite last week, or was it a couple weeks ago? We talked about Fortnite. It's a game by Epic, our dear friends at Epic Games, who graciously returned to the PC, to PC gaming.
Did you read that like rant in the comments of our...
No.
Someone was ranting about how Epic's just... How dare we support an Epic
project?
Oh,
my God.
That's an interesting... Yeah. I didn't even think that sentiment was there, but they did sort of leave PC gaming for a long time. For me, it's always been like, well, they make Unreal Engine, which is a huge thing for the PC and, you know, and for consoles. Yeah. But
it's like they've always kind of been there.
Kind of, in
a
way.
One of the first games I ever played on PC was Jazz Jackrabbit, which is made by Epic. I just made five people listen to this go, ah... Jazz Jackrabbit.
It's a good game.
An awesome game.
Terrific game. So Fortnite is a sort of shooter, builder, multiplayer game. And news came today.
They're changing the name to Fortnite Z, by the way.
The Fortnite Z.
Wow. Pretty good. So news came today that they are looking into being an always online game. Not unlike Diablo. Not unlike, you know, an MMO or anything else these days. And I'm just going to read a quote from the producer, Tanya Jessen, who was interviewed about this. It's going to be really dependent on gameplay, and it's also dependent on platform, the method of getting updates and stuff like that. So I can't say for sure today, one way or another, whether or not we're going to use it. So it's up in the air, but they're looking at it.
I just want to point out how vague that is. It's going to depend on gameplay and platform. Well, it's a PC exclusive, and they've described the gameplay. I mean, I don't want to just like rip into or comment. It's just a weird thing to say that it's dependent on gameplay and platform when these are things that are, I would assume at this stage.
The Automatic Response Generator 2000.
So, I don't know. We certainly object to these systems. Is that fair to say, guys?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't I mean,
I get it, you know.
Yeah.
I get why it's used, and you know, it's totally up to the developer. I just nope.
I mean, some of what Josh Augustine, our former editor when he was here, would talk about with Blizzard is they say, like, it's going to make the experience better for players, you know, and it's not just DRM. It's going to make the experience. And I see where they're coming from with that, but, like, would Left 4 Dead 2 have been better if it were always online?
No.
Survey Diablo 3 players and see how many of them think that the always online requirement improved their experience versus
and how many soldiers overseas appreciate it.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's no gameplay justification I can think of other than if scarcity is a big concept in Fortnite, such as, like, there's lots of rare building items and, like, rare, I don't know, guns and stuff. And loot is a big thing, as it is in Diablo. I don't know if that's the case. You know, having always online at least creates some protection for them to avoid players duping items and hacking and stuff.
But that's only necessary if you have some sort of global marketplace.
Yeah.
You know, I like to be able to tweak my games. I know the developer wants me to have a certain experience, and they can certainly make their game give me that experience, but give me a civilization style, like, world, like, sliders to make my, you know, you don't have to give me that, but that's the kind of stuff you seem to want to prevent with Always Online versus giving me control to jump in and invite my friends the way I want to and set up games.
I mean, they've got to decide what kind of game they want to be, I think. You know, do they want to emulate Minecraft? Because if so, and you want to be hyper moddable and you want to let your community really decide the future of the game, and I think there's good reasons for doing that.
And if it is a glorious return to the PC, as we might hope, then hopefully it would be moddable and all of those things.
Let's have some openness. All right, so as we are inclined to do, we have some listener questions, or one listener question, I believe, this week. If you guys want to send in your own, and please do, oh my goodness.
Talk to us.
Yeah, we're right here. Call 877-404-1337, extension 724. Or you can email pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com with an MP3 WAV file, as Patrick did. Here's Patrick.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Patrick from Orlando, or Pat, as you guys might know me, from the PC Gamer TF2 server. I had a small problem this morning. I flooded my keyboard with a cup of coffee and am now stuck using an Apple One until I buy a new one. But the problem is I don't know what to buy. I've had my Logitech G15 keyboard for about 6 years and was seeing if I could get some suggestions from you guys. I know SteelSeries is a pretty good company and there's plenty out there. I was looking at a DOS keyboard also. So if any of you guys have any suggestions, please let me know. I would love to take your guys' suggestions when getting this. So thank you.
Well, I've got a suggestion. Your dishwasher. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to give up your old friend and toss him out. You can take that keyboard and what I would say is run it under the tap, you know, flush all the coffee out because I'm sure creamer is not great
there.
Rinse that puppy out or just throw it in the dishwasher, let it run for a cycle. And what you have to do, the important thing is, and I've done this with keyboards over and over and over and over again. Here at work one time, I opened up the dishwasher and there were like 20 keyboards in there that IT had just put through the dishwasher. I'm not making that up. The only thing you have to do is you have, and this is super, super, super important. You can fry your PC. It has to be bone dry when you plug it in again. Or you could short the keyboard and also short your motherboard. So what you do is you just put it outside, let it air dry for, you know,
48 hours.
I would say just to be on the conservative side, 3 days minimum.
Sure.
And that's if, you know, the weather, it's not humid and all that. If it's humid outside, keep it indoors, put it near a window or a fan or something and give it a week. But then it should be fine. If you find that it's not, the G15 was a great keyboard.
Yeah, that's what I use.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic one. It's got great action. Right now, Logitech has a good low-end keyboard, the G110. That's really fine as well, but that's a little more expensive at $50. But if you're looking at the DOS keyboard, then you're probably out to spend some nice cash.
Yeah, that's what I use at work, actually. Do you use a DOS as well?
Yeah. I love it.
It's a mechanical keyboard. Fantastic.
I'll never go back after using a mechanical keyboard.
It feels so right. Right. Yeah. But, you know, it is loud.
I like to go click, click, clack, clack.
Yep.
It's super loud. If you have roommates, you will definitely wake them up. I use it more for writing at work. I don't use it at home. I use a Microsoft Sidewinder keyboard. The thing I like about that is it's kind of modular. You can pull the numpad off. I like a really compact desk setup. You know, you don't use the numpad that often.
No. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when you're accounting, perhaps, right, when you're doing taxes. And its keys are, like, very low, like, very compressed. Like, they're not very high, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, Logitech's keyboards tend to be very plush feeling.
I like a high key.
Really squishy, you know, like high activation. What do you call that?
Travel.
Travel, yeah,
key
exactly.
Key distance, yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. There are a lot out there. And if you have, I don't know, I guess, like, Best Buy and other folks don't really put them out for display. But
yeah, although Amazon, you know, I'm sure you can return ones if you, know, if you don't like it. The DOS keyboard does have a what they call the S model, which is supposed to mean silent, but they kind of downplay that because it's nowhere near silent, and they know that.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just suppressed.
Yeah, and it's really almost the same. It's really hard to tell the difference. SteelSeries has a mechanical keyboard that's fantastic. It's just beautiful, very spare. I love their design and the graphite color of it, but it is $150.
Get a new graphics card for that.
Yeah, right. If you don't want to spend a lot of money, the Logitech's K120 is a fantastic keyboard for $15, but it is very bare bones. The most interesting new entrant, however, and I just got to play with this a few weeks ago, is the Corsair K60. It's their first, I think, mechanical line of mechanical keyboards. And the cool thing about it is, like, you know, in most mechanical keyboards, they, you know, all the keys are recessed into the unit.
Yeah.
This one, the keys are, it's like they're not wearing their skirts or whatever.
Hey.
Yeah, it's like they're growing out of the keyboard surface, like little mushrooms. You know, you can look at the Corsair website. It's called the K60. And the action on it is fantastic. Mechanical keyboards, it's still loud, but it's not quite as loud as most, even though that's sort of counterintuitive. But maybe not, because the box is acting like a resonation chamber, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Very comfortable, very slick, very handsome. There's another one that has a big bank of, I think, like 18 macro keys, and that one's called the K90. So the K60 is 110, the K90, I think, is 130. So definitely check those out. They're brand new, and they are really, really slick looking. But again, I would say, first of all, try washing your old keyboard. See if that works. I think it will. If it doesn't, the Logitech G110 is not that a whole lot of money at $50. But if you really want to spend money, there's the Corsair models, the Steel Series, the DOS keyboards. Yeah, best of luck.
I'm a big fan. I'm going to mention, of course, I'm not sure if there's a specific name for these, but sort of standalone keypads. Logitech has one, the G13.
Right.
Which I think is about $60 or $70 or $80. So this is like a left-hand WSAD replacement. Has, like, you know, usually about 20-something keys, maybe 10 or 12.
Woot often has those on sale. If you check Woot every day, I guarantee you within a couple months, the Nostromo.
It actually was this week. I know. The tech version of Woot had that on sale. That's actually what I have at home, the Nostromo.
Uh-huh.
This is Razer's equivalent, and it's definitely not suitable for every game. I don't even use it for every FPS. I mean, Tribes, I really need, like, a tight setup. I need to, like, total familiarity with my keyboard, and I have that with my keyboard because I use it for everything.
Mm-hmm. It's great for Dota, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those situations where you want your hotkeys, like, very accessible, close at hand, where, I mean, most number setups on a keyboard necessarily provide or aren't designed for that. But what it does for me is, like, it's very ergonomic. I mean, there's a really nice sort of, like, curve on the Nostromo that I like, but more than anything, it lets me have, like, a wide stance with my hands.
Right.
I mean, your keyboard is, like, centered, and, like, you have your left arm kind of in front of you and your mouse hand off to the side. Well, this, you're kind of, like, very square. And that, I don't know, some people might
That's a great point, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've thought about that.
And it's depending on, like, your chair, I don't know, it works really well for me.
Also, keep in mind, do you need macro keys or don't you? Because that's, you know, that can add a lot to the price, and, you know, I'm just too lazy to program macros myself.
It's just not going to happen.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. It's Cliff out in Anaheim, California, also known as Deadshot on Steam. Hey, just more of a comment. I just wanted to say that I actually really, really enjoy listening to Evan and his DayZ stories. I mean, they're fantastic. Some of them are funny, and some of them are just really entertaining all around. So anyway, keep up the great work. And besides that, I also think that Evan is probably the best games journalist in the entire industry. His articles are fantastic.
Wow.
Anyway, keep up the great work, guys. See ya.
I just want to be totally clear. I did not listen to these questions.
There's one great journalist in here, and three turds.
Oh, boy. Oh,
sitting in our chairs.
Oh, man.
Well, thanks, Cliff.
Can we? Can you make a note of his name?
Yes.
Great. Yeah. Okay. We'll address that soon.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for submitting questions this week. Again, it's 877-404-1337, extension 724. If you want to give us a call, those are the magical numbers. It's so easy. If you have a phone. If you don't, it might be
it's
tough.
Difficult.
You like find change. Who has payphones these days?
Right.
I don't know.
It would be hard to find.
Really.
One.
I don't think you can do it with a rotary phone either.
But at the same time, it's an opportunity for a spirit quest, which I enjoy.
Oh, I'm all about. You know what? Why don't we have spirit quest holidays?
That's a good point.
Why don't we have that in America?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That would be
vacation
awesome.
Vacation days, sick days, spirit quest days.
Seriously, you register your spirit animal. And
nice.
With some sort of agency, right? Mm-hmm. And
mine's a wolf, just so everyone knows that.
Right, right.
Absolutely. So, yeah, playlist. What are we playing this week, guys? What have we been playing? What are we going to play?
Well, I've finally finished The Walking Dead Part 2.
Oh, yes.
Oh, so good. So good.
Oh my goodness.
And Tyler is cautiously raising his hand. I'm the only one who hasn't finished this 2-hour game.
Ruin the podcast.
It's just so long.
Ruin the podcast.
Just imagine taking like a serrated knife and cutting open your chest with no anesthetic and having to peel away all the layers and the muscle and the bone and all that and the gristle and then exposing your heart and then dumping like, you know how when cars hit a bus shelter and the safety glass breaks up into squares?
Right.
Like imagine taking a handful of those squares and dumping it into the wound. And then having somebody punch your heart over and over and over again with that glass in there. Just over and over, wailing on the same spot until that it's just ground up and your heart's just pulp. And and then that's what it's like. That's my experience of the game.
That's roughly the game.
I mean,
that describes it.
You might be playing it down.
That's a good review.
But yeah.
But that's kind of why I stopped playing halfway through. I was like, I was anticipating, like, you're just going to step all over me in a minute, aren't you? You're just going to, like, make me make decisions that I don't want to have to make. All right? I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for this game of life and death.
Yeah.
And you've got this little girl with you the whole way. So in addition to having to make all these decisions, you're like, oh, I've got to set a good example for her. I can't just be a dick.
But you don't. You can. That's a viable path. You can you can ignore her.
Right.
Right.
And like you can not give her food.
Right. Yeah. So, this is my health bar. Okay. this delicious protein raspberry, delicious snack.
This is for adults.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Logan, did you enjoy the experience of having your aorta assaulted?
I it was thrilling.
Yes.
It was one of the best adventure games I've played in years.
Oh yeah,
and now I'm left with this sort of quandary because there's, I always complain about games that take away control from you, right? But this is an adventure game, and it's also very much a linear story. Although of course, there are many, many, many branching paths, and I found it was exhilarating. Was that because I was anticipating an adventure game, a story-driven game? Was it because they did it so well and so eloquently? Or was it because the characters were so well-drawn that my interaction with them, even when I wasn't doing anything, was part of the experience for me, or maybe all three of those?
Mm-hmm. It almost feels like playing a TV show where the script is already written, but the director has given you freedom to kind of ad lib your own role in that story.
Actually, I would say even more than that. Even it gives you more than freedom. It gives you Because rather than the sort of choose your own adventure feel where the story simply goes into a different direction, it gives you, I'm trying to conjure the right words. Mm-hmm. It gives you
agency, empowerment,
the dignity of living with your own choices.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It respects that.
You have to.
No matter what those choices are, whether they're horrific or whether they're really nice or whatever, you know, it respects the dignity of those choices and gives you and reflects them, the world back to you in that way.
Sure.
I know that's a very stumbly way of putting it, but that's the best I can do.
Something I'm really curious about is, because for me, I really wonder, and it's not just about like the brand and like being motivated or interested in a brand, but like if I would like the game as much if it was called something else, if it was just called Zombie RPG 2012 or something, because I feel like part of the value for me is knowing how the context, right? Mm-hmm. This rich context, which I'm deeply familiar with. I've seen this TV show. I've read all the comics.
Right.
And how this fits into that. And it's sort of like self-aware in terms of like, there's lots of ripples from the show, mm-hmm. right? In the game, you meet the main character in the back of a police car. The main character, Walking Dead, is a policeman. So there's kind of this nice inversion. Immediately.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they do some interesting things that, you know, as in the show and the comic, you have a child with you, but the child isn't yours. Kind of a nice variation,
yeah.
but still the same feeling, the same theme. I really want to talk to somebody who has no exposure to Walking Dead and see what they think.
I can tell you that I have only seen two episodes of The Walking Dead, the first two. That's it. I've never read the graphic novels.
Okay, never mind.
And I read, and I saw the first two, you know, episodes. I mean, it's all right. I didn't. It was okay.
The show isn't good.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't know
I
that.
Like the show, actually.
But, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. This I loved. And and just from the first moments when you're like, wait a minute, my character is under arrest.
Yeah.
And his may have done something really nasty.
Yeah.
Did you have any issue with the visuals? Because I felt like that was one thing that I benefited from having read the graphic novels is that, you know, the visuals, they look very much like how the art style in the graphic novels is. So it didn't really bother me that they were kind of primitive compared to, you know, current generation games.
It honestly didn't bother me at all, just because probably after the first hour, you know, most of it takes place in your head.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's sort of
A tiny bit put off at first. Not that the graphical quality is low, but the stylized look of it didn't grab me right away.
It almost
felt whimsical in comparison to what was going on around me. And yeah, but like you said, about an hour in, I wasn't even noticing. I wasn't even noticing my own criticisms of it. I was kind of in my head thinking about decisions. And
you know, it is actually a credit to the writers, and in that I noticed that the expressions are never as articulate as the writing is. You know what I mean?
The lip sync.
Yeah, there's a limited vocabulary of expressions they have to work with, right? And so sometimes I feel like, you know, it's not matching up
quite a bit.
Yeah, you know. And it's funny because there's another game I'm playing right now. It's called Thomas Was Alone. And it also tells a story.
Sounds awfully depressing.
It sounds like a
And he's still alone.
It sounds like a brochure meant for children about depression. Honestly.
Thomas was alone, but you don't have to be.
Exactly.
It's going to be uplifting,
and
sure.
And basically, the entire game is made of these three boxes. They're squares. It's still... you know, stories take on their own lives in your head. And after a while, you know, the fact that you're manipulating just, you know, different shaped boxes.
If you choose the right box, Peter Molyneux pops out. Oh, my God.
But it's really a fantastic, fun game. It's a classic puzzler that has a great story with it. So
is it available on Steam?
It is. Or is it? I'm almost certain that it is.
Cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Thomas Was Alone.
Thomas Was Alone.
I'll look at it.
And has a lovely, lovely soundtrack. I fell asleep with it one time on, and I woke up in the morning, and I'm like, oh, man, what's that nice sound? It was really, and then I'm like, oh, right. Like, loser, you still have your shoes on.
That's every morning for me.
Nice. Okay. Cool, Logan. Tyler, how about yourself?
Oh, me. I'm still on the space kick. Still playing Eve. I mentioned last week that I bought Lunar Flight in the Steam sale.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the first game that's made me nauseous while playing.
Oh.
How is that possible? So it's Lunar Flight, like you mentioned, is sort of a not 2D, but 3D style lunar lander, you know, vertical.
Basically, start
Z-axis.
You have like
movement.
Four moon bases now that I've played it a bit. And basically, your missions are to fly between the bases carrying cargo or to go out and get scientific data. And you're basically in this crater. And it's what I like about it is that it's such a. It's focused simulation. It's just this is what it is. Try to fly a lunar lander. It's harder than
Is this classic?
No, it is. It is
sort
it,
of.
It's definitely right? like inspired.
Right, right. I loved that game.
Yeah.
I probably spent
so
millions
yeah.
On.
But it's I'll have like doing a mission, I'll have four windows. I'll have kind of a flyby view that helps give me context of where I am, an overhead map, inside the cockpit view, and sort of a view behind, but not necessarily behind the lander, because depending on which way, because I have, yaw, and I have all these different thrusters. I can move laterally, or I can spin, or I can tilt and use my bottom thruster. And
wow.
Yeah, I actually got slightly queasy, like as the camera was kind of spinning around to reorient it, and I'm like, which has never happened to me in a game, but I keep playing it. I don't know why I keep playing it. It's definitely not a bad. It is a good game. It's just, yeah, it's just flying a lunar lander.
It's a very focused niche.
It's focused, yeah, but it's fun. And I actually played. I think I see on here that you might have been playing this too, but Sin's the Solar Empire Rebellion.
Oh, you've been playing that?
I just jumped in over the weekend, and
yeah.
I did some tutorials, and that's about as far as I got because there's quite a bit to learn. I don't know. Did you do the tutorials, or did you just jump in?
I skipped the hell out of those tutorials.
I was thinking of doing that, but after doing the first tutorial, I was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't skip
them. Like, do you want to play the tutorial? Yes, no, hell no.
that totally needs to be the case for any game. So, like,
not that it's like crazy complicated, but
not.
Like, I
be a man.
I know I have this weird thing where I'm super thorough. If there's a tutorial, I do it every time.
See, that's the perfect game for it because it lends itself to like very careful planning and decision making. So, yeah, background. I mean, had you played Sins before this? No,
not really. I had played around.
I looked at 4Xs in the same way, but it's just not really been intimidated. I'm not afraid of complex games. Come on, but just kind of worried about how much time it would take and like how demanding it might be in other ways. But it's totally a manageable game. Mm-hmm. It keeps you busy. I mean, there's a diplomacy system. There is combat, obviously. There's trading. The tech tree is pretty immense. But after 75% of the way through one game, I felt like I had a total understanding of the tech tree, what things meant. I went into the wiki a couple times and looked things up, like what certain values meant and things like that. But it's a totally manageable game. It's not all about plate spinning, and I love that. I mean, it's pausable, I guess I'll mention, and it sounds like such a simple thing, but it makes all the difference to me that I can queue up my actions. And compared to something like StarCraft, which is a terrific experience, I can admire what I'm doing. I can stop and watch. I don't feel like I'm penalizing myself for enjoying the experience visually and sitting back and being like, damn, that's a sweet capital ship that I built. And damn, it's leveled up. And damn, it's like bombarding the hell out of that planet. And that's great.
In StarCraft, by the time you got to the end of the first dam, your base would be gone. And, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's been super, super good for me.
How are your dams per minute on that?
and damn, it feels good to be a space gangster.
I'll skip the rest of the tutorials. Just play it.
Oh, whatever.
Like a man. Yeah.
No. I totally understand. Like, I'm sure there are things that I'm not understanding completely. I don't get how the relationship system works exactly.
Right.
It seems flawed to me right now, which is probably wrong.
It does feel like a game you could play several
scenarios
and not realize there's a key feature there that, you know, which has happened to me in games. And that's why I'm like crazy about tutorials now.
Well, it has something else I like, which is skirmish mode plus a map editor. Which is relatively rare these days. I mean, I think back to my long experience with Red Alert and Command & Conquer.
Ooh.
And just sort of handcrafting my own little experiences there. And I just jumped into the map editor and you sort of set a few settings. You say, like, I want this planet group to be made up of wormholes and whatever, or I want asteroids. I want pirates or I don't want pirates. And it takes care of the rest for you. And I did that, and I played a mission and got through it and really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah. I guess the thing that's sort of the level of abstraction is right in most situations. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mentioned the diplomacy system. I'm not really getting that right now. It sort of just feels like you get alerts and doesn't feel totally integrated. Mm. Like, I've had allies that sort of seem like they're helping me out, and then I go in to attack a system and they don't follow, and I'm not sure how to interpret their actions and stuff. But anyway, what else are you playing, Tyler?
I restarted Mass Effect 3. I don't know why.
Wow.
What? Just on a whim.
Just why three? Not one? Three?
Yeah, not from not one, two? Not from two. I just I want to play three. And I made a male ship last time I played with a fem ship. And, you know, I tried to use the character creator, and I thought they all looked really ridiculous. So I went with the standard.
Things can go male ship. Go wrong in there very quickly.
Things
can
go really wrong.
Yeah.
That's not one of the things I would compliment Mass Effect for.
But you know what? Nah. The thing is what year is it set in? You know?
It's 2000. I should know this. I'm the lore guy.
Right?
I'm going to totally fail everybody here.
It's this millennium that it's set in?
It's 2100 something.
Right? So, the thing is, it's like standards of beauty, right? Change all the time.
Yeah.
So it could be that having your lips in your forehead is like considered to be like just super hot.
Are you referring to what I think you are? Because there's this hilarious.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Where somebody mods the facial model of Shepard. I don't actually know if this is possible through the default editor. Somebody's made this like ogre of a Shepard. And it's like total like underbite. Well, he's like saving a child, and it just looks so good.
But that could be hot.
Well, even today, a lot of female players romance Karis, and he's like a dinosaur predator hybrid thing. So.
He's got a good personality.
Right, right.
Yeah,
he's got that good reptile brain.
Right.
It's funny though. I think I've mentioned this before. Like, I'm also playing Eve, and beautiful character creator, really cool.
Yes.
You can actually just use your mouse to pull out features and adjust them. And you never
like Beetlejuice.
You never interact with other than taking a portrait and having that be your character's portrait. You never interact with people with this avatar. It's hilarious to me that they have, I think, one of the best character creators
right
in games right now. Well, and it's rarely used. It says something about CCP to me.
If I'm not mistaken, they were developing it for World of Darkness, and then they ported it into Eve, because why not? So it was developed for a game where you will be interacting with avatars.
Oh, no, totally understandable. But anyway, so things are a little going kind of slow. The war, if you're not haven't been following, I've been trying to cover this big war that sort of started, and I'm embedded with Test Alliance. Please ignore. You shouldn't ignore them. If they come around, they'll probably shoot you. So you shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's a trap,
it is known in science fiction, a trap war. They've taken most of the Delve region was the contested region when it started. They've taken most of that. I think that Goon Swarm, the other major alliance involved, is going home. I heard rumblings of that today in the chat, so I'm not sure. I have to look in. Sounds like they might be done. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
Sounds like Test Alliance wants to start moving east toward some big really big alliances.
Is there a concept of east in Eve?
Yeah, based on just the default orientation of the map.
Just curious.
People use north, south, east, west, even though it's a 3D map and technically we should be given coordinates.
It's useful and relative, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a huge alliance that way called Against All Authorities. And if you can imagine by their name, they are against people asserting authority over their land.
Is it like a bunch of angry teenagers, high school students?
It doesn't, not against all authorities, possibly. I don't know.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like it. I've heard their comms, their mumble, because they're so crazy. They're spies.
I've talked about their comms.
They're spies in their recording. And no, I mean, these people are like really serious and well-spoken when they're on the comms.
They used to be Band of Brothers, didn't they, AAA?
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
I've heard
talk of it contains that. Elements that used to be Band of Brothers.
And Band of Brothers is not a popular alliance.
Yeah, well, they were the big alliance when I played Eve, seriously. And then they apparently got decimated. So
I'll keep you guys updated. I hope to go on some fleet operations this week and see what happens, see what trouble I can get up to. I got blown up just earlier today. There was a gate camp because there are gates which lead, I've talked about it before, which you can jump star systems. And I jumped into a nearby one, which was used to be a safe goon swarm haven, and they left. And I jumped into about 15 red ships.
Sounds bad.
Not allied with me. And then, yeah, I decided I'm going to leave this place. And they said,
they said, no, you're not.
And then I just see a little, you know, you just sort of see a little message pop up like so-and-so's autocannon scores an excellent hit on you. Where I'm like, I have a completely unfitted, like, little dinky frigate. So it took about 5 shots. And I exploded and I wrote LOL in the local chat just in time. Just in time before.
You're dying words. No, this is the... This is the scene at the on the bridge of the USS What's the name of your ship?
No, I didn't.
Did you change your name?
I didn't. I usually call them the Sundance Kid.
Sundance Kid.
Butch Cassidy.
The bridge of the Sundance Kid. And it's only you, so there's no, you don't have any crew, but let's just pretend
standing.
You have crew. Commander Tyler, systems have failed. What's your final command, sir?
Lol.
Life's... And I'm writing this down. I'll send that message immediately, sir, over global comms.
Oh, back at home, we're getting a distress signal from the Sundance Kid.
What is it? Where is he?
It's coming in now. L.
Yes.
O.
Lol.
L. What?
End
what?
Transmission.
No, that's it. Wait, there's a picture of a cat now coming in.
He's gone. Leave him. Delve claimed him like so many others.
We can't help him where he's gone. To a clone that I purchased at a nearby station.
Yeah. Well done. So, Godspeed in your further adventures. With
yeah, hopefully I get into some good stuff. It's been a little quiet for now, but I think we are moving east, I hope. That's what it seems like.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Good luck. I'm going to mention MassEffect2Faces.com. If you, for whatever reason, you want to replay Mass Effect 2, you want to start from scratch, like Tyler did with 3, you can't do this with 3. There's no MassEffect3Faces.com, as far as I know.
I don't think so.
But you can use a custom save editor to create a new character. You can like customize all the abilities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cheating. It's just
I've been
like,
using it extensively to like decide how my Mass Effect 3 game is going
to
go.
Exactly. Right. It's just handy. It's a time saver more than anything to get you started. But using this and in combination with custom faces that people have made, they're just code space, so you can download and create faces and hair appearances that you actually can't get in the base game.
Hmm.
It's like the closest thing to modding Mass Effect, really.
Because basically Mass Effect allows you to put in a coded series of numbers
values.
And such and letter values that determine the face. You can make some pretty amazing faces.
Yes. Cool. So I mentioned Sins. That's most of what I'm playing right now, but of course I'm playing DayZ, and my latest adventure was fixing an all-terrain vehicle, an ATV, with my friend Delusions. That's his call sign. And he like wrote me on Steam one night and was like, hey, I found an ATV. I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. Because vehicles are, vehicles are not only super rare in Arma, in DayZ, I should say, but basically when people take a vehicle and they drive it off somewhere and they log off, it stays there. It's there and there and there and there alone until somebody else takes it and moves away or blows it up. So if you blow it up, it respawns.
Mm-hmm.
So vehicles do not like propagate. There are only X amount of vehicles in the game and that alone. So when you find one, it's super rare because at this point, a lot of like clans and like organized groups have taken the vehicles and put them on a certain spot that's very secret and they hoard them basically. Mm-hmm. So finding something like this is a big deal. I've only, in my like 100-something hours playing the game, I've only seen 3 vehicles, 3 or 4. I've heard maybe a couple more, but yes. So he finds an ATV, but the wheels are broken. He needs a wheel, a tire, and he needs gasoline, and he needs a new engine block. And these are all discrete items within the world that you have to come upon, basically. So we're like, okay, let's leave it where it is, and we're going to hunt for parts. We just like spend the next 2 hours looking for like going through garages and like industrial buildings is what they're called in Arma that spawn this certain type of equipment, basically like looking for loot, basically opening treasure chests is kind of like the mechanic. And you know, we finally do that. We get into a lot of like scuffles with zombies. We lose some blood and stuff. Another friend joins us. We get in some firefights and we wander back. And I actually didn't get to, you know, we get all the gear together. We wander back and, you know, we're covering all these kilometers of terrain and it's taking a long time. But, I'd actually get to ride the vehicle. You know, I didn't even really care about that. Just the feeling of, like, there were three of us and there's two slots on an ATV. And so we get back and, you know, there's this awkward moment where we're all like, well.
As you're all thumbing your guns.
Yes. Because yeah. we have a camp, like, it was way on the other side of the map to the east. And we're all kind of like, I'm like, well, it's like 11 o'clock for me on a weekend. I'm like, I want to go to bed. I'm done. I'm cool. So I'm like, you take it. It's okay. It's all right. So they get on the ATV, they fix it up, they get ready to go. And just, again, like, you know, I've talked about like the concept of scarcity in DayZ, you know, like certain ammo is rare, certain guns are super rare, like 1% spawn chance and things like that. So things just universally within the game are hard to find. But the notion of a sound effect being rare was so novel to me, like a vehicle. Like a vehicle is such a common concept in any game, especially if you've played ARMA and you can just drive tanks around whenever you want, basically. You can... They're easy to come by. But hearing that engine start up successfully, you know, we did it. And then drive off and hearing it like drop off in the distance, hearing the Doppler effect as they buzz by me, like that was delightful. That was like my reward for this 2 hours of basically like automotive labor. Yeah, we shot some zombies and yeah, it was fun. But more than anything, like at a broad like game design level, this wasn't something that was assigned to us. This wasn't like a game or you know, and again, bring it back to the WarZ, like, is the game going to have quests? I don't know, to be determined. But we had an idea. We set our own goal. And DayZ just kind of silently said, okay, you can do that. Sure, you can have that idea. It supported our idea. And that's a beautiful thing when your motivation can be intrinsic in a game. Like, it's not about experience points. It's not about leveling up. It's not about achievements. It's not about unlocking stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess it's not in those conventional terms. We wanted the experience. We went after our own experience. Like, yes, we got added functionality. I guess you could say a vehicle is loot in some way, mm-hmm. but it's a piece of loot that lets you actually do something, lets you express yourself. And I don't know, that was really special to me.
Earned it.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
It was tough. Yeah, it was tough. And just the way DayZ kind of makes those things incremental and very difficult. I mean, we could have easily not found the stuff we were looking for.
Right, that's what I mean by earning it, right? It's yeah. Like there's no assurance.
We had to get a certain amount of luck, and we had to know the area of the map we were in. You know, we took some time as the first thing we did, like look at the map and say, okay, we're going to go here. There are this many buildings we can hit. I know there's probably going to be a tire there. We're going to go here next. If we don't find it here, we're going to go here, and then we're going to loop back in this direction. We could have wandered off in the wrong direction, gotten shot. You know, we could have... I don't know.
I want to be actually specific about the difference, which just suddenly occurred to me, which is there's earned where you're just grinding, right? And then mm-hmm. there's earned when you don't know the outcome, right? And mm-hmm. that's, and the second one is the one that's rare and valuable and just charged with your own meaning, you know?
When you can't look ahead on a skill tree and see exactly what you're working toward and how long it's going to take. And that's what I guess, kind of talking about the idea of spawning genres, that's the kind of gameplay idea I want to see repeated, you know, where a sandbox is really a sandbox. Something like GTA to me is more of a playground. Great fun, mm-hmm. you know, but not a lot is earned when I unlock a new thing, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but here it's you're here, there's all this stuff you can do, and it doesn't necessarily tell you explicitly what everything does.
Yeah.
It's up to you to figure it out and come up with hey, that sounds like a good idea. Let's try that and then do it.
I mean, certainly DayZ is about trust in a lot of ways, you know, trusting mm-hmm. other players and whether you should or not. But it's also about the game's willingness, I think, to trust you. Like, you're a smart guy. You installed this mod, or girl, I'm sorry. you got it running. Mm-hmm. Like, you can figure it out. Like, this is a brutal world. You don't have a gun when you spawn, but, like, you know, good luck. You got it, you know. Best wishes.
Here's a Rubik's Cube.
You can make your own fun. You know, we don't have to make it for you. And I love that feeling of trust it places in you. It doesn't always go right. You know, sometimes I run around in the wilderness for an hour and get kind of bored. But
it might not always go right
in
every game that tries it. But I'd like to see more, because it's not something, I mean, games traditionally have been a directed, guided experience, and there's nothing wrong with that kind of game, but this is kind of new territory, I feel. Not entirely new. There have been games before it. Eve, for example, is something that is not particularly directed. The fun parts aren't, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like talking to agents and doing missions is not very fun.
That's what you do when there's no one else on to do anything fun with.
And that's why, like, I looked at there was a review of Eve from Zero Punctuation from Yahtzee. And you know, his conclusion was, this isn't fun. I guess this is for just crazy people who like glorified chat rooms and spreadsheets. And I'm like, well, you didn't. Maybe that's a gut reaction you can have after playing for a few hours. But if you're in a player-run corporation with like, where people are giving you goals and telling you we need to do this because war, you know, it's crazy fun.
We used to call it Spreadsheet Commando on an old gaming forum I went to.
And I'd like to think of more examples of games that do that sort of self-directed fun sort of thing and trust you to figure it out.
Minecraft is one of them to some extent.
Right.
I mean, people delight in building a CPU inside of a game and things. It's not just that stuff that's like highly specific, but like deciding like I'm going to make a very specific sort of underground structure and it's going to look like an underwater city.
Well, I went into
That's going to be mine. It's going to be like my underwater tree fort, whatever, submarine. Yeah.
Well, I'll admit, like, sort of my ignorance when it was first sort of getting big and I got into Minecraft and I was like, I don't know how to craft things. I'm hearing about people crafting stuff. Where's my booklet that shows me everything?
Sure.
And I start looking around. Some people have websites and YouTube videos with instructions. But now looking back, I like that it didn't just tell me how to make everything. And the idea in DayZ that the first time you heard a helicopter, it was like, you can do that? That there's a helicopter? Someone has a helicopter? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The idea that it doesn't tell you everything and it's like, you know.
Discovery as a concept.
Discovery. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily hiding mechanics, but if it seems like something that should work, allowing it to work.
Sure.
You know, what would have been amazing is if, as you heard the sound recede in the distance, you shot the guy in the passenger seat in the back of the head. And then as, you know.
Yeah, go ahead, take it.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up because, like, not to spend, like, the entire end of the podcast talking about this, but, like, this is, like, I don't even know if this is helpful for my friends, but I consciously stayed in the same spot. And I was telling them, okay, I'm about to lose you. I'm about to lose you. So they had a sense of their radius of sound, right? So they moved in a direct line away from me. So they knew about, okay, like 12 or 15 seconds after we started moving, that's about our radius for the sound we generate. Mm-hmm. And like, so even by staying there, by making it like a selfless decision, however you want to think about it, I helped them with some sort of tactical information, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally.
It's kind of what happens when you have a world like that has just super high fidelity, where every sound you hear means something. So it was a player decision or something. TJ, don't let me keep blathering on.
I've been playing a lot of things. It's the Steam Summer Sale, as I'm sure most of you know, and so I've been buying a lot of the little 250s and 350s that I see on there. Other than Walking Dead, which I love, and I think everyone should definitely pick up, I picked up Terraria. Been having some fun with that. Dear Esther is a really quick it's a linear story, almost not a game. I know you guys talked about it on the podcast before. Super Meat Boy I picked up. Having some fun with that. Yeah, it's definitely very difficult, so if you're looking for a difficult platformer. But mostly I've been playing lots of Civ 5 and Dota 2. Other than the Civ Diary, which is ongoing, I played some of the historical scenarios that they give you, which I hadn't really checked out before. Fall of Rome is really fun. I also played the one from the Viking DLC, and I won on the last turn, which was like, I was like just sitting there completely tense for like
that's
20 turns.
That's pretty huge in a Civ game to win on the last turn.
Yeah, well, you have to build this.
I don't think that's ever happened to me, actually.
You have to capture London and then build this one specific wonder, and for like 20 turns, I was one turn behind. Like, it was going to complete the turn after the game ended. So I had to come up with this ploy where, like, okay, I'm going to chop down all of my forests on the very last turn to generate production for my cities, and I ended up pulling it off.
Wow.
Dota 2 I've also been playing quite a bit of. I've decided I'm going to get good at it or die trying, which is the same thing I told myself when the StarCraft 2 beta came out.
Man, I totally respect that.
Yeah.
I had that attitude a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And, like, I might come back to it. But it's just the old design still lingering in the game. We talked about this a little bit, like, the recipe system, like,
right.
Man, I want to spend the time to figure that out.
The item system is, I think, the biggest barrier to entry, honestly. You feel like you get a little bit better every game, though, to the point that I'm usually not the worst person on my team and usually not the one getting yelled at the most for being a noob, which is progress for me.
You're the second noob.
For Dota fans, my two favorite heroes are Lycan, which I know is like, ooh, big surprise. TJ likes the one that's a werewolf. And Omni Knight is also really fun because you just get to, like, protect and heal your teammates.
That's what I played, too.
So, yeah.
I played some Tribes, too, I forgot to mention.
Cool.
I feel all this stuff distracted me from it, like, starting with Diablo 3 and then Max Payne 3. And I finally got back in, and we're not going to go back to talking about it for 20 minutes on every episode. I'm just saying, like, it's still really fun, and I still get called a llama and a noob.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that that's an insult, by the way. You llama.
Yeah.
You slow llama.
Someone was actually doing it to me this time, and I started to get why people get frustrated. I still don't lash out at people because I think that's totally immature and stupid, but... Yeah, I kept going for the flag, and this guy kept just walking over it and then dying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I had it. I was going 200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah. That's definitely a situation where using the word bro condescendingly is appropriate.
Yeah.
Nice.
Bro.
Bro.
Brother.
Gosh, bro.
All right.
Mine brethren.
Well, thanks for listening this week, guys. Again, I'm just going to reemphasize, like, please send us questions. Like, we will play them. That's something
we answer.
That's something that we do sometimes. I know it's not always been totally consistent, but we want to. Like, even if you're sending us a comment, letting us know what you want to talk about. If you have a topic you want us to address, big roundtable-y type thing. Like,
if you just think Evan's great, you know.
Oh, God.
Have you ever wanted to know something about the future? Because we can see it.
This sounds like the beginning of a great infomercial. Okay.
Yeah.
But yes, through the use of bionic. Yeah. Cat ear technology.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm just imagining the, like, black and white, the old way version. Oh, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yep.
For just three easy payments of no dollars.
Our omniscience has grown, I think it's fair to say. So
absolutely.
Again, that number, which I'll share again, 877-404-1337. It's toll-free, extension 724. And with the movement of those servos, we'll bid you goodwill.
Bye-bye.
Say goodwill.
Goodwill.
Oh my God.
Goodwill.
Wow. Right at the finish line. Good week. Good day.
Good week.
Good evening.
Good gaming.
How about just goodbye?
Bye.
Good game.
That's a classic.
GG.
All right.